Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf, and I trust everyone had a happy and a very filling Thanksgiving Day feast. Now, I hope to cover two topics this morning. Later on in the hour, if we have time, I want to talk about the psychological impact that injuries have on young athletes. Now, we all know that physical injuries are part of the game, but what's not discussed all that often is how do amateur athletes cope with the psychological stress of suddenly finding themselves on the sidelines, not being able to play. Again, that's later on in the show. But first up, as you may recall, on last week's program, we talked about a serious hazing incident with the Wall Township High School football program, which is now being fully investigated by the Monmouth County Police Department. The football team schedule was shut down, coaches were suspended, students had their lives disrupted, and on. Just a terrible, terrible cascading of negative consequences simply because a handful of selfish, short-sighted, and, well, cruel kids on the football team didn't think about the consequences of their actions on one of their younger teammates. And as noted last Sunday, it's just so frustrating that these hazing incidents continue to occur at the high school level, and we continue to struggle to find a way to stop and to prevent them. And even worse, I just want to remind you that hazing continues to happen not just around here, but all over the country. Case in point, perhaps the most powerful high school football team in the nation, the legendary Mater Dei program out in Southern California, well, it made headlines this past week for all the wrong reasons. If you haven't heard about this, let me share some of the details with you. This hazing case, the way at least I understand it, presents a new kind of twist on high school hazing, and it explains why, in part, the school is defending itself by saying it's taking the accusations seriously, but no one from the football team is being held accountable, at least not yet. In short, there's a kind of accepted and understood practice of the younger football players asking to take on some of the larger and stronger upperclassmen on the team by challenging them to a physical game of what's known as bodies or slapping. Perhaps your son has heard of this, if you haven't. In any event, this is where two football players, away from the field, this is where the two football players line up and face each other. They're not in pads, and they basically trade hard body blows to each other's torso until it gets to the point where one of them finally gives up from the beating. And invariably, it's the younger, the smaller player who surrenders, but only after he's quote-unquote proven to the older player that the younger player is worthy of enduring all sorts of serious punches and hits to their body. These are not mere taps or passing shots. These are real solid punches to each other. And in this particular case out at Mater Dei, when a younger player was seriously injured, and according, this comes from numerous major media accounts, none of the other football players who witnessed this beating did anything to step in and to stop this barbaric attack. And that's what I find so extraordinary. What they did do, however, these kids who watched this, was to video record the assault. Now, the entire episode has a kind of, well, boys will be boys kind of feel to it. And even the head coach of the team didn't take any kind of disciplinary action. Okay, so no names are being revealed because the boys are all minors. But basically, what we have gathered from their various accounts, it was a younger player who weighs about 175 pounds. He basically endured a bodies session with an older football player who outweighed this kid by more than 50 pounds and is obviously older. There was the usual beating and trading of punches, but then the younger boy, the victim, began to get hit numerous times in the face, suffering a serious broken nose, which required surgery, a couple of deep lacerations around his eyes, even worse, there were reports of traumatic brain injury from the pummeling to this kid's head. And according to the kid's lawyer, there is ongoing pain, slurred speech, cognitive dysfunction. The boy has since transferred out of Mater Dei, and his family has filed a lawsuit against the school. In fact, the complaint, the legal complaint, adds that the legendary Mater Dei head football coach, Bruce Rawlinson, is well aware of the hazing rituals that go on within his program. And Rawlinson is alleged to have told the victim's father that the head coach, Rawlinson, was in an untenable position as far as disciplining the older kid, the attacker, because according to the lawsuit, the youngster, the attacker's father, is an assistant coach at Mater Dei. And then Rawlinson added, quote, if I had $100 for every time these kids played bodies or slappies, I'd be a millionaire, unquote. That's what Rawlinson, the head football coach, told the victim's father, according to this lawsuit. Now, that seems, of course, more than a bit odd. All I can assume is that at this school, at Mater Dei, there is an unwritten expectation that all the football players need to go, undergo a barbaric rite of passage called bodies. That part of their culture is that it's expected that the younger players have to go through this beating in order to gain the respect of their older teammates. And as a result, because in this case, the kid in effect, quote-unquote, volunteered for this kind of brutal confrontation, the local police didn't file any charges. In fact, their attitude apparently is that the kid brought the injuries onto himself. I don't know if you're following this, but in effect, they're saying that since the kid volunteered to take part in this body's confrontation, it's very hard to now sort of have him go back and ask for police charges to be brought. Okay, put this all in perspective. Bear in mind that Mater Dei High School, it's one of the country's most powerful high school football programs. Over the years, it's produced two Heisman Trophy winners, many NFL players, and dozens of top college players. Excuse me, I'm fighting a cold here this morning. In any event, Mater Dei is this year's country's top-rated high school football team, according to rankings by USA Today and by Max Preps. They just finished their season going 11-0 and pretty much steamrolled their opponents. So this is a very, very prestigious high school program in terms of its tradition and success. So how could this practice be allowed to continue? What are the coaches thinking? Because apparently they know about this. The head coach says, yeah, I know about what goes on with these kids with bodies and slappies. How can he allow this? And is it allowed because it's expected that the younger players are supposed to step up and ask for this kind of treatment? That their football program culture not only condones this kind of nonsense, but basically puts it on the younger players to ask for it. Does that somehow make this violent behavior acceptable? I just don't get it. And the bigger question is, if this is being done at Mater Dei, does this kind of mentality exist in other high school programs around here and around the country? Let's talk about this. 877-337-6666. That's, of course, our number. So what happens now to the head coach and the other coaches or to the other players? I haven't heard or read about any disciplinary investigation. I assume the school is simply going to say that this is a matter of litigation and therefore we are not allowed to say or comment on anything that's going on. But really? I mean, the head coach, he's already admitted that these confrontations, these beatings, these rites of passage take place routinely in his program. And in this case, some of the older players videotaped it. How is this possible? As noted, is it because there's just an expectation that the younger kids will quote-unquote ask for this body's attack? It's very, very strange. And again, the cops have not brought any charges because, again, their attitude is, well, the kids sort of asked for this, but that's not the way it goes. The kids obviously feel this kid was relatively new to the school. He felt this is how you gain the respect of your older teammates. I want to be part of the team. I want to be somebody who's gone through the hazing ritual. So he did this, but that's that psychological pressure. That should not count. Again, I just don't understand this. The kid apparently has since withdrawn from school. According to the family's attorney, the kid has had some serious medical concerns from this. But again, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, the school is responded, but it took a long time for all this to play out. This beating took place back in February, and the school didn't respond for quite a while. And again, it's just so odd and so strange. And now what I worry about is, as I said, this may happen a lot of other schools as well, because apparently it's accepted at the best high school football program in the country. All right, 877-337-6666. Want to get your thoughts about this and what, if anything, should be done to the school? I mean, from what I can tell from the school, yeah, they're taking it seriously now. But again, their season is over. There's no mention of the football coach or the coaching staff going to be disciplined, suspended, nothing. It's just weird. It's weird and it's scary. And again, I don't know if this is, and I'm curious to hear if you guys have heard any about this as well, other situations like this where kids are basically pressured psychologically to step up and ask to partake in this kind of physical confrontation. Seems very, very strange and very scary to me. The kid apparently is, again, has some serious issues with his nose being smashed in, surgery for that, lacerations to his face, deep lacerations, and of course some serious some brain injuries as well, causing slurring of speech and some cognitive issues. This is just stupid. This all could have been prevented. Simple as that. 877-337-6666. What do we do? What happens to these coaches? Suppose that was your kid who got beat up on. How would you feel about this? All right, let me take a timeout. When I return, I'll go right to your calls. Stay with me. We're talking right now about this another hazing incident. This one took place at Mater Dei High School out in Santa Ana, California. It left a kid pretty seriously injured. But the twist on this is that because the kid basically, and again I use the term loosely, quote-unquote volunteered to partake in sort of a physical beating by an older player, the kid suffered some serious head wounds and possible brain damage, and now his family has filed a lawsuit against the school for allowing this. Again, the police out there haven't really, they investigated but didn't file charges because they looked at one of the video that one of the football players took of the incident. And I assume the cops basically concluded, well, this kid volunteered to get beat upon, so you really can't then come back and claim, you know, that you were, physically assaulted and you were just a victim. But clearly there was an expectation from the school, from the school's football program, that this is a rite of passage that younger players have to endure if they want to gain the respect of the older players on the team. Again, Mater Dei, considering one of the very best, if not the best, high school football program in the country. Now, a few more details. First of all, as I mentioned, the kid's family filed the lawsuit. This is a little more detail from the paper out there in Orange County in California, the Orange County Register. They write that in the immediate aftermath of the fight, which took place, again, early February of this year, the victim, Player One, had said he was referred to, Player One, the victim told a member of the coaching staff, as well as a team trainer for the football team, that he had basically fallen and hit his head on a sink. Obviously, the kid was embarrassed and didn't want to make a big deal about, saying what really happened. He didn't want to be a snitch, in effect. So the trainer then basically spoke with the administrative staff at Mater Dei, who told him not to call the paramedics and actually to delay contacting the kid's parents. That's according to the file, a court file from the parents in the lawsuit. Parents end up were notified about an hour and a half after the fight was over. So that's kind of screwy, and obviously something you wonder about why they took so long to either get this kid some serious medical help, and why they didn't contact the parents. And then, after initially declining to be interviewed by the local police in Santa Ana, the head football coach, Bruce Rawlinson, did finally agree a few months later in April. Remember, this took place in February, early February. And Rawlinson told the police that he had no knowledge of this bodies or slapping or any other kind of hazing in his football program. Now, mind you, that doesn't seem to match up with what Coach Rawlinson told the victim's dad back in February when the incident first took place, about getting, he'd be a millionaire if he got $100 every time he had a kid involved in a slapping incident. So something doesn't seem to add up there at all. Maybe the coach misspoke or it's out of context. I don't know. But that strikes me as curious. Anyhow, this past week, the lawsuit was filed against Mater Dei High School and the Roman Catholic Diocese of Orange in Orange County Superior Court. And the local paper, the Orange County Register, reported that the case, quote, alleges negligence per se, hazing in violation of the California Penal Code, negligent failure to warn, train, or educate, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. So this past week, again, this is months and months after this took place, Mater Dei's president of the school finally said in a statement that this is from school president Father Walter Jenkins, said in part, quote, please know that we take this matter seriously and commit to you all aspects will be handled consistently in accordance with the core values of our institution. Okay, well, again, we'll see how this plays out, but again, you should know, as what I've investigated and looking at all the various accounts and about this, doesn't seem anybody from the school has been held accountable. Nobody seems to have been suspended. Nobody seems to have been in a situation where they've been basically disciplined. It just seems like, especially because the kid has now left the school, it seems like it's like, okay, we're just going to, move on. After all, there are no police charges this, so it's just a civil lawsuit, and we'll see how this plays out in court. Again, the fact that this kid seems to have volunteered to do this, does that make a difference? As he was just simply fulfilling what was expected of him to be a member of the football team. And again, why can't we end this kind of hazing nonsense, this cruelty? All right, 877-337-6666. Let's take some calls about this. What should happen here? Is this different from what's happened in traditional hazing situations where, a kid is basically held down, pinned down against his will? This is different. That's what apparently allegedly happened in Wall Township with the football team. How is this different? Is it same? Why can't we just educate kids to stop doing this? Let's start this morning with Ed Ward over in Elizabeth. Ed, good morning. What would you do in this situation? What do you think? What's your take on this?
Well, first off, if they're beating the kid up, I mean, he's got damage to his face and all that stuff. To be honest, Rick, I think that's a crime. I think something has to be seriously done. And again, I go back to what I said last week when I was on. All teams now, it's got to be throughout the United States, because it's not just a New Jersey issue. It's a national issue. You need to sit down with some prosecutors, people of the law, with parents and kids of each sport team, and you got to go over this. If you're going to do this, you know, serious consequences are going to happen. This is different than the hazing in Walt Township. Again, hazing is hazing. It shouldn't be done. But again, this is kind of serious now when you got a kid who's seriously injured and all
yeah.
that.
I mean, I again, we all know and we agree, Ed, that, yeah, education is the key. We have to somehow, as we said last week on the show, you got to bring in, right from the get-go, you got to sort of break this chain, whether you bring in the local prosecutor to address the athletes and to really sort of go through sort of in-your-face, you know, warnings to these kids about we're not kidding around, that something's going to happen to you if you are involved in this. It's going to ruin a lot of people's lives, so just don't do it. You know, we know a lot of athletic directors will have this kind of conversation with the athletes on the various teams, but unfortunately, I think sometimes the ADs, it just sort of gets glossed over. The kids don't pay attention. So maybe, as you said, you bring in a prosecutor, who says, "Here's how it's going to play out if you're accused, or we find you're involved with a hazing incident." Now, the difference here is the police in Santa Ana didn't bring any charges. They said, "Well, this kid sort of basically, you know, volunteered to do this on his own." Yeah, but that's not really fair. I mean, this kid obviously wanted to make an impression with the new teammates, so he volunteered to do this, but with the expectation that he had to do this, and he just literally, and of course, the kid he was facing didn't limit the activity just to the so-called ground rules of bodies or slapping by just hitting the kid's body. He eventually got hit in the kid in the face repeatedly and hurt him bad. So I don't know. It's
one
really
other
wrong.
Thing, one other thing. I don't care how legendary this coach is. I don't care how many great players he's had, Heisman trophies. They should fire this guy on the spot for letting this happen, especially when he made that statement. For every time I knew about slappies or whatever the game's called, I could be a millionaire. Get rid of the guy now. Yeah.
Ed, I got to tell you, I understand old school mentality. I understand that boys will be boys. I understand this is something we handle our own if we're a football program, but that doesn't make it right. No, this is where I'd really like to shine a little more light into and sit down with the coach and say, you know, you think this is okay to allow this nonsense? Do you think this is helpful? How does this help your program? How does this improve your kids' players' performance? How does this make them better teammates? I mean, the coach doesn't seem to understand just how serious this is. And as we said, the contradictory comments don't add up. And that's where, if I'm on the board of trustees or the president of the school, I like to talk to the coach and say, let's make sure our core values, that's the term the president used, the core values of the institution, let's make sure we all share the same core values. The idea here is not to bring kids in here and get them physically, you know, beat up. I mean, that's not a good thing. Ed, thank you for the call. Let me move on. But I agree with Ed that something has to be done. We all agree that education is the key, but brother, we have to do something to really get these kids' attention because we just aren't getting it through. And as I asked earlier in the show, I have a suspicion, and I'm sure you do as well as a parent or as a coach, that this happens all over the country, and unfortunately, it's just not reported or doesn't come to light until something terrible happens, like this kid out in California, or something happens like in Wall Township. I mean, it's just got to stop. I mean, the only way I can frame this is that if you're the parent of that youngster, and that youngster comes home and is seriously hurt, I mean, I can just imagine how distraught and angry and upset you would be as a mom or dad if this happened to your kid. And, I mean, I just totally preventable, didn't have to happen, totally cruel, totally criminal. It's just wrong. I mean, I just can't say that enough. And yet we just can't seem to educate our kids to not do this. It's just weird. Let's move on. Let's go to Jack Smithlin over in Farallon. Jack, you know, we've discussed this, you and me, many times over the years, and it's just criminal that we can't seem to get over the hurdle to get teenage kids to understand. Now, we all know, I know you're going to tell me, we all know this, that bullying is against the law in every state in the country. We know that. But why can't we get hazing, you know, to be understood as well, that it's just a crime? It's just wrong.
How is this? First of all, feel better. I can hear you in the background coughing up a storm there.
Yes, so, yes.
But, you know, how is this not a crime? I mean, first of all, this kid asked for it, but he was forced to ask for it. You know, if he never stepped up and asked for this ritual, the kid would have been blackballed. He probably would have never played or ever seen the field.
Yeah.
And, you know, let me ask a question. I walk into a bank, and I walk up to the teller, and the teller says to me, hey, do me a favor, rob me. What do you mean? Rob me. Just rob me. Okay, so the guy takes out a gun. He robs all the money. Is that not a crime? It is a crime. So this kid asking for it, he didn't ask for it because he wanted it. He asked for it because he had to ask for it.
Yeah.
And if he didn't, you know, first of all, like you and I have talked all the time. Bullying is a crime. In a school, we had papers that we had to write up. If a kid said shut up to another kid, that's how serious bullying got. If a kid excluded a kid from a conversation, that's considered emotional bullying. So there's so many different laws, but physical beating. You know, and you talked about this school being a prestigious school. Well, in my eyes, not anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? That coach is responsible for everything that happens in that football program. That AD is responsible for everything that coach knows. I'm saying get rid of both of them. And I'm not talking about just get rid of both of them. When that football coach knew that this happened, and now a kid is seriously injured, brain damaged, probably will affect the rest of his life. This guy should be charged with manslaughter, you know, in the case of this kid being injured for the rest of his life. You know, Rick, this is a crazy thing. And you know what? These have to be rules that are put forward when all those parents come in. You know, this year at Fallon High School, where I coached for many, many years, they asked me to come in and talk to all of the athletes at the beginning of the season, beginning of the school year. Every single coach, every single athlete that's going to participate that year in leadership, in sports psychology, even in with parents there, even with parents, sports parenting. And you know what? This should be a rule that's put in at the beginning of every year. Talk to every single parent in a group setting like I just talked about and individually. And if it happens, I don't care what, the kids immediately removed from the program, and the coach should be suspended because he is responsible for every kid's safety on that team. And if this coach knew that this stuff was happening, are you out of your mind? Get rid of this guy. I don't care how great they think they are. You know what? I don't care. My kid's never going to suffer because he goes into a great program. Great programs provide safety and they teach. This guy's not teaching anything other than brute, you know, physical beating. So, you know, Jack, I would have loved to have talked about your next episode, segment.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, you know, shortly. But I just to emphasize or to underscore what you just said, again, you know, this is a case where I agree that you know, this should, why are we still having these incidents take place? It's cut and dried. If you are a coach and you have somehow built up some sort of macho program with your football team, and you sort of, you know, have this approach that, well, these things happen, boys will be boys, what are you going to do about it? No, 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 no. That's like 1970s. No kid now these days signs up to play on a sports team in school and has to go through some sort of rite of passage where they're going to be physically hurt or endangered. I mean, no. That stops. That's gone. That's over. That's done. And quite frankly, if you as a coach, as an educator, if you allow this or hear about it and don't take any preventive measures to nip it in the bud, then you know what? You're fired. I mean, I don't believe that we haven't gotten to a point here where a coach would say, oh, I just didn't get it. Give me a second chance. It didn't really happen. I wasn't there. No, you're responsible. You're the head coach. End of story. I mean, you just get fired. And you can't allow this to happen. You just can't allow this to happen. And I'm sorry if you weren't aware of it, but the fact is that you are the top person. And again, this case, the athletic director didn't do much. The trainer didn't do much. I mean, really? I mean, come on. All right, so it's a great football program, but it's a football program built upon values that perhaps most people whose kids play sports don't share. Physical beatings, intimidation? Nah, that's not where I want my kid to learn how to play football or any other sport. Anyhow, Jack, thank you for your thoughts as always. Yeah, and I do want to talk in the next segment about the psychological stresses that kids go through when they are injured. It's a little far removed from hazing, but it's something that's a topic I've wanted to address for a while, and hopefully we can do this today. All right, let me take a time out. When I return, we'll talk about, you know, yeah, kids play sports. It's an assumption of the risk that you might get injured, and you have to sit out some games. But how do kids cope with that? It's difficult when you're a kid because kids are impatient and they see the clock is ticking on their high school career. 877-337-6666. Stay with me. Back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf, and I apologize for the occasional coughing spasm. I'm dealing with the first cold of the year, and I have my cough drops and I have my hot tea, but I'm doing the best I can, trying to, you know, play through the pain. Anyhow, let me give you a quick update. A few weeks ago, I had on the show the best-selling author John U. Bacon, and he was talking about his just a superb new book, Let Them Lead: Unexpected Lessons in Leadership from America's Worst High School Hockey Team. Now, I've been tracking this book. It's attracting all sorts of wonderful feedback. It quickly became the number one best-selling nonfiction book in Michigan when it pubbed a couple of months ago, just this past week. Let Them Lead was selected by NPR, National Public Radio, as one of the best sports books of the year. I do plan on having John Bacon back on the show again soon because obviously the lessons and takeaways from that true story of him coaching his old high school hockey team, full of wonderful leadership lessons for coaches, parents, and kids. And I will ask John about how he dealt with any concerns or were there problems with any hazing on that hockey team. Anyhow, Let Them Lead. I obviously endorse it universally. It's a wonderful book. It's fun, fascinating read, true story. You can get a copy on Amazon. Okay. As promised, I want to talk about what do you do when you're, because look, athletes, high school athletes get injured. And if you're a parent, if your son or daughter has been hurt in their sport to the point where they had to sit out a few weeks due to an injury, well, you know firsthand how difficult it can be to keep your kid's spirits up. I mean, it could be a sprained ankle, a broken nose, a concussion, pretty much any kind of injury that keeps your kid out of the lineup on game day or from practicing with the team during the week. Coping with an injury can trigger all sorts of concerns for your athlete. Will they get better? How long will it take? How will I know when I'm good to go? How will I react with my teammates and coaches? Do I still go to practice even though I know I can't play? These are the kinds of, honestly, the basic and troubling questions that injured kids wonder about, and they really, really don't get much in the way of guidance. It's you know, young athletes can get angry, depressed, even non-communicative as a team and their teammates move on with the season. Suddenly, your kid's on the sidelines through no fault of their own. And as a mom or dad, what do you do? What do you say? You just offer the kid the bland comments like, hey, don't worry, you'll be back in action soon again? I don't know. I'm not sure that's enough these days. Kids are impatient. They know the clock is ticking on their career. They want to get back to the action. But what can you say to them? It's as simple as that. Okay, let's go back to our calls at 877-337-6666. Let's go to Rob Fried. Dr. Fried, good morning. What's your take on this psychological concern
with kids? First of all, thank you for taking this call. I'm very passionate. It was so great to hear from Jack, and I know he's got some input on this. Number one, thank you for mentioning me last week, which was very kind, and I do appreciate that what you said about my award, and I take that a lot of pride in what.
Well, the USA Track and Field for Women's Award, that's a big deal. Yes, that's great.
Thank you so much for mentioning. Now, let me go over a couple of things, and I have some great input on this, and I actually looked something up on this, and I'll give you a quick personal story. Number one, as far as injuries go, okay, it's something that when I was listening to the running show, I should have been on the Verrazano Bridge that day, and I couldn't, you know, Joel is such a great coach, and I've worked with him in the past, Joel Pasternak, and and he gave some great points. I was so upset that day listening to it. I wanted to call in, but I was really upset because should have been on the Verrazano Bridge run in New York. And the reason why I didn't was my cardiologist said, you know what, you've been having some issues with your heart, but with some bleeding issues, and I really don't think it's a good idea right now because I'm on Plavix and blood thinners. He said, let's hold off on the marathon. You've done Boston. You've done 22 of them. Let's hold off on that. Let's get this checked out. And it really upset me, but I knew it was the right thing to do.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I looked online on what kids and parents should do. Number one, when you're out and you can't participate, set realistic goals going forward. Use this time to, study, think about being optimal. Visualize yourself being healthy, Rick. Think to yourself, you know what, it's an injury. You're going to get over this. It's eventually going to pass. Be optimistic. Focus on the present, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm looking this up. I'm not basically coming off the top of my head. And, you know, I say to myself, you spend months and months of training, and kids go through their seasons, and this is what they live for. And you know what? I spent months training for the Boston Marathon, training for the New York City Marathon. I wanted to be the first guy that I know of with stents within a year to come back and run like a 3:15 marathon. And my cardiologist at the time was all behind it. And you know what? It's one of those things. I'll have many, many more chances because it's something that, all right, listen, you're upset. You deal with it. But you have to take what the consideration going forward. It could have been, you know, bad if I would have gone out there. Now, I'll give you a positive story, which happened to me. When I was playing soccer in high school, I tore my MCL.
Right.
And because I tore my MCL, I was in a cast, and I think of a tip situation where there's a lot of, you know, people listening that he missed a game and Lou Gehrig never got off the field after that. And I think a lot of kids are worried about that. Professional athletes, it almost happened with the Mike White. Everybody was all excited about him. And I'm curious what they go through on their end. But because I had an MCL injury, Rick, something great came out of it. When I came out of the cast back in high school, my orthopedist told me to start running, and get that quadriceps and the hamstring strong again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that I had a talent in running. And because of that, I got a college career out of it. And then still at 60-plus years, still at it, competing at whatever level I'm doing, and I still have the enthusiasm to keep at it. And the most important thing I think that I can say for parents and kids is this is really psychological, and you made some great points. There's nothing wrong with therapies. There's nothing wrong with talking to your coach. And I think it's a good thing for the kids should stay and go to the games. And I remember when I tore my MCL, I showed up at every practice. I watched, the games. And it killed me inside because I was a senior, and I never got that chance to play college soccer, which really what I thought I was going to wind up doing. As it turned out, I became a distance runner, and I'm still at it. And the last thing I want to say is, Rick, with the heart, okay? I brought this up. I think you know the story. I went for a routine stress test, and, after running marathons all these years, I just wanted to get checked out. My cardiologist said, you got a blockage there. What are you talking about? He goes, you got to get checked out. And you know what? Thankfully, I did, because if I would have had a heart attack, which I never did, I probably would not be here. I had the LAD, which is the Widowmaker. Well, my wife would have been a widow. So please, everybody, whatever age, just because you're competing or you think you're okay, get checked out. Thank you for letting me get this point across.
No, Rob,
we got to continue. This is a great story, and you are the best show that WFAN has on radio because of what you do, and I mean that. And you take care of yourself with that cold.
Yeah, thank you, Rob.
All right, Rick. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Good, smart advice. I mean, here's somebody who is obviously a his entire life a gifted runner, and basically said, no, I gotta get myself a stress test to make sure you see what's going on. And as Rob just said, it basically saved his life. It's good, smart advice. Other things I just want to chime in quickly. Yeah, I mean, I do think that he made a good point about the fact that if your kid is injured and cannot play, excuse me, if you're the parent, get your kid to talk about it and talk about the, in these days, of course, there's such a huge new horizon, concerns about mental stress and doing the right thing for our kids. Get your kid to talk about what it's like and their fears, concerns, worries about being injured and not being able to practice or play in the games. It's important that they talk about this. And you as a parent might have to basically initiate that and get some quiet time and let them talk. As far as whether the kids should continue to go to the team practices, yeah, that's what they were going to do regardless if they hadn't been injured. So, of course, they're still a member of the team. They go continue to go to practices. They go to the games. They maintain their relationship with their teammates. This is what, you're still a member of the team. The fact that you got hurt makes no difference. Don't let them fade away. Don't let them just sort of like, well, that season's over, I'll just move on. No, let them enjoy that sense of team camaraderie. And I do think that's important. It's a team commitment. And the fact that they get injured, well, I'm sorry, but that is unfortunately, these things do happen. But again, the most important thing is you got to make sure that the youngster is talking to you and you're giving them as many positive answers as you can. Because as Rob just mentioned, yeah, sometimes there's a silver lining on this. I remember myself when I was in high school and I hurt my knee, strained my knee my senior year as a football player. I mean, I thought, oh, this is going to be devastating because I couldn't play for 3 or 4 weeks. But as I went through physical therapy, I got my knees stronger, which I'd never done before. And ever since then, my knees have been in pretty good shape. So that was a silver lining that I happened to have enjoyed just because of the fact that I was dealing with an injury in high school. But, you know, you move on. It's as simple as that. Let's get back to other callers. Let's go to Vince in Brooklyn. Hey, Vince, thank you for your patience. You're next up on the fan.
Thank you for accepting my call.
Yeah.
Okay, happy holiday to you, everyone, all that good stuff. Listen, let me say something. I'm listening to what you're talking about the hazing and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Listen, high school is just a minor thing, all right? When you get into college and you start joining fraternities, and mostly fraternities, a lot of fraternities, you know, you're part of a lot of the hazings, all right? Especially the fraternities that get kicked off of campus for certain reasons and things like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Listen, yeah, you got people to get that die off of unknown foolishness. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Vince, I hear you loud and clear. And I think that's what we've tried to establish. Thank you for the call this morning. Look, hazing is part of bullying. And the last few years, school districts have finally taken bullying very, very seriously. As Jack Smithlin had said early on, you know, teachers today, they are under a legal obligation to report any kind of bullying activity that they witness in their classroom or on the, you know, playground or in school in the hallways. They have to report that. And that's the first start. But I don't know why hazing, which happens perhaps on a school team, why that's not reported just like bullying is. I mean, the coaches or teachers or educators, they're under the same kind of guidelines. And why in the world, if you're a coach of a team and you put all this effort, all this time, all this energy, all this passion into trying to build up a sense of a winning attitude and doing the right thing for the kids and make them feel good about their experiences, why in the world would you allow hazing to take place behind your back? Now, again, we know there are some lunkhead teenagers out there who don't want to abide by the rules, but hopefully if you really beat down the rule over and over again that we're not going to tolerate any kind of hazing on our school's team, that eventually they'll get the point. Or the other kids, the older kids, will stop them from doing it. They're the ones who will intervene and say, no, we don't do hazing on this high school sports team. It's as simple as that. And that needs to be done. That needs to be done as soon as possible. And again, we'll see how this plays out with Mater Dei High School out in California. I'd be curious to see how this lawsuit eventually, gets resolved. But it is very, very weird to have a top high school football program where the coaches seem to allow this terrible kind of hazing initiation right for the younger kids to endure getting beat upon by the older players. All right. That's going to do it for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks, as always, to the Z-Man, Ed Arzuman. Hopefully I get rid of my cold by next week. I'll see you next Sunday right here on the Sports Edge.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.